Well, hello again. This morning, we'll be talking about the four agreements, which I showed you the book earlier. Highly, highly, highly recommended to everyone. Actually, it's even part of an Air Force training program, so we're not alone here. But I also wanted to show you my little luggage tag. I went to India in 2006, and when I pulled the book out again before I went to this workshop, behold, I found this luggage tag from India because I'd been reading it all through my trip to India. So I've had this book for a very long time. A little bit about the author, which you may or may not know. Don Miguel Ruiz has been a spiritual teacher for the past 3 decades. He is the youngest of 13 children born in rural Mexico. His parents were healers and practitioners of the ancient Toltec traditions. And I don't know if you heard the music that was playing for our in-gathering. Many people think of Latin America, Central America, South America as Hispanic. But actually, the music that was played is pre-Hispanic, because before 1492, there were other people living there. He graduated from medical school and actually was a practicing neurologist in Mexico. But a near-fatal car crash changed his life, and he left medicine to examine the essential truth about humanity. His mother helped him with her Toltec teachings, and he began to combine Toltec teachings with scientific perspectives and merged ancient wisdom with modern physics and practical common sense. So this book was actually published in 1997 and contains some very, very practical ways for living. The four agreements are, if you haven't heard all of them yet, are be impeccable with your word, don't take things personally, don't make assumptions, and always do your best. The first thing they started with in this seminar is to talk about the fact that these are agreements. They are not, N-O-T, caps, all red, conditions. Because what we tend to do in the way that we've been domesticated is we begin to treat everything as pass-fail. Did I do it right? Did I not do it right? And once we think we haven't done something right, we immediately judge ourselves. And that really puts us in the wrong space. The space you want to be in is a space of continual love, of a continual path walked in unconditional love. It's like building a muscle. You don't lift weights one day and say, oh, well, I don't have enough muscle, I'm not going to do this anymore. You don't want to ever be discouraged on this path, because unconditional love guides you through the entire process. The book starts off talking about domestication, or the dream of the planet. And the dream of the planet includes all of society's rules, beliefs, laws, religions, cultures, governments, schools, media, and art. Think about it. If I say Jesus, what's the first thought that pops into your mind? How do you think of that? Usually it's with some artistic rendition of what you've seen all your life. And you believe that's true. And, of course, society uses mom, dad, friends, family to teach us how to be part of this collective dream. And what they do is they teach us how to be attentive, how to pay attention. And attention is really the ability to discriminate and only focus on what we want to perceive. Just think of the fact that you're sitting in this room right now. There are millions of things going on. Some of you are in this room. Some of you are not in this room. That's what attention is. And we are trained on what to focus on, when to focus on it. The dream of society is really a lot of unconscious agreements that we've made. Because from birth, we've been trained to make those agreements. So we've been trained to make agreements about what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, what's beautiful, what's ugly. The worst thing is, we've been trained to believe that our value is conditional, that we are somehow not enough. You might want to think about the fact that, or ask yourself the question, are my perceptions and beliefs mine or someone else's? And once you ask yourself that question enough, you begin to realize, oh my gosh, I think a lot of what I believe is really a function of groupthink. And then there becomes a conflict inside of us because we think, oh, what am I going to do about that? Well, I like to think of it in this way. This is a quote from the great Gordon Sumner. Does anybody know who that is? Very cool. More popularly known as Sting from The Police. Poets, priests, and politicians have words to thank for their positions, words that scream for your submission, and no one's jamming their transmission, because when their eloquence escapes you, their logic ties you up and rapes you. I always think of it in those terms because once you hit a wall, once you hit a conflict, and you try to figure out, well, how do I handle this? The only thing you have, usually, if you aren't paying attention, is what you've already learned. And sometimes that's not enough. So the first agreement that Dominic Gilroy describes is to be impeccable with your word. And what happens with that is, and I've had so many people come up to me, and even during the workshop, people were like, well, that's so hard to do, because they immediately think outside of themselves. But actually, being impeccable with your word is about you. To be impeccable with your word is to use your energy in the direction of truth and love for yourself. Not to use your word, thoughts, intentions, behaviors against yourself. And so, Dominic Gilroy Jr. tells this story. And he's about 8 years old, and his grandmother's made this soup, and she wants him to drink some of it. But he doesn't want to, so he says, no, I don't want any soup. And she says, but no, you must drink this soup. You must be a healthy, strong boy, and the only way to do that is to drink this soup. And so they go back and forth for a while. And then finally she says to him, you have to drink this soup, because if you don't drink this soup, you have to realize that there are thousands, millions of children starving in the world, and to waste food is a sin. And in his 8-year-old mind, he takes that in, that's our domestication, and with most parenting techniques, that's how you do it. You try to find some way to make the person do it. And it's a control mechanism that we all use, however we grow up. And he said what he did is he ate the soup that day, but that thought remained in his mind for decades. And so he would go to a buffet, he would go to a restaurant, he'd eat dinner every night, and he would look at the plate of food, and he would think, I have to eat all of this, because to waste food is a sin. Now, of course, you could take some home, but never mind. But the idea behind it is, we are the only creatures that can self-domesticate, so sometimes you only have to be taught something once, or hear something once, for it to change the trajectory of your life. And so he continued to do this and realized, you know, I'm always uncomfortable at the end of every meal I have. So he tells this joke about going, you know, they travel all around the world. And he says, well, I went to every priest, every imam, every Buddhist master. And I said, I have a question for you. Is it a sin to waste food? And he said the overwhelming response was, while it's not the best idea and we really discourage it, it is not a sin. And suddenly he said, well, then I, you know, his grandmother had long passed away, but he said, well, I went back to her. And I said, Grandma, I just want to tell you, I have talked to everybody. And the one thing I can tell you is it's not a sin to waste food. So from now on, I'm only going to eat as much as I can eat and no more. And this is the point at where you become an adult. This is the point at where you start taking responsibility for your actions. Yes, someone can tell you something when you're a child. Somebody can tell you something now. But the truth of the matter is, you cannot allow someone else's desires, will, thoughts to supplant your own. You must always be choosing for yourself. You must always be loyal to yourself, always true to yourself. And that's because you are a valuable and powerful being. And I like the way Rilke puts it. He says, a billion stars go spinning through the night, glittering above your head, But in you is the presence that will be when all the stars are dead. And so as a powerful being moving through the world, these choices have to be made by a responsible individual. And then he goes on to talk about not taking things personally. Because as a mature individual, or as a maturing individual, we don't want to take things personally. As Les Brown puts it, don't let someone else's opinion of you become your reality. We often do that. And the fact of the matter is, circumstances will often dictate people's opinions and beliefs. Have you ever seen that hangry commercial where it's one person when they're hungry and then they eat a Snickers bar and then they become this other wonderful, pleasant person? Well, to quote Ice-T, you never know whether you're dealing with a nightmare walking or a psychopath talking. Or Jimi Hendrix, an angel come down from heaven. And trust me, I work in Center City, Philadelphia. I see that and everything in between. I have coworkers that deliberately cross the street when they see certain people coming because they know they're in the midst of a mental health crisis, and we have to deal with all of these things. But you have to understand that people are somewhere along that continuum. And when you let their opinion become your reality, you have given up your power. When you take things personally, you live on the defensive, where you give up your power to someone else, rather than living on the offensive, where you maintain your power and determine your own worth. The other thing is, you've got to be equally wary of praise as of censure. People will praise you for fishes and loaves one day and happily crucify you tomorrow. It is critical that you maintain your own selfhood. You must determine your own worth. The other thing that's important here is that, and they went every day of this workshop, they did this. You only exist to the end of your fingertips. You end there. You can't take responsibility for someone else's behavior. Often, that's one of my things. I get very embarrassed for other people, and you know, then I go tell them, well, I think you should have done this, or I think you should have done that. But really, my responsibility is for my actions, my behavior, my thoughts, my beliefs. But interestingly enough, it's one of the biggest control mechanisms we have in culture. And some cultures more than others. Have you ever heard of a culture where if one member of the family does something, the whole family is either, you know, banished or has some terrible situation? I see some of you smiling, you know what I mean. The other thing is you don't want to put your expectations on others. Has that person agreed to the thing that you want? Or have you just put that expectation on them and then take it personally when they don't do what you want? And that's where we get to making assumptions. Again, it's another Rilke quote. Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is, in its deepest essence, something helpless that wants to be loved. The problem with making assumptions is that we believe they're true. We believe the things that we are telling ourselves in our minds, and even the random thoughts that fly through our minds, we hold on to them as truth. We create a lot of emotional poison by making assumptions and then taking it personally. So they told a story, the book tells a story about, okay, so you walk into a mall, you see someone you like, the person looks up at you, smiles at you, and then turns and walks away. Where does your head go with that? Now, you have to understand, that's where your head is going with it. It doesn't have to do with anything that's actually going on with you, that person, or what's going on in the mall. But often we are told that what's in your mind is the truth. No, it's not the truth at all. In relationships, we make assumptions that our partners know what we think and that we don't have to say what we want. We have the ability to communicate for a reason, and we really have to use that. One of the things they talked about is we don't fall in love, we rise in love. Often, again, the dream of society, the condition of society, tells you that falling in love is a thing that happens to you, and you can't take care of yourself, you don't know what to do, you don't know how to behave, because it is all out of your control. But that's not true either. That's usually something else. It's need, it's addiction, fear. Often all of these things are supplanted for what we call love. We rise in love. Assumptions get in the way of this. We want to elevate each other in our relationships, not just make assumptions and then punish people when they don't do what we have not communicated to them. As a powerful, valuable being, it is our responsibility to ask questions, to get the facts, to say what we want, instead of making assumptions. And then, of course, the final agreement. Always do your best. Your best is never going to be the same. It will change from moment to moment. It will change over time. Imagine how you were at 10 and what your best was then. Imagine see who you are now and see what your best is now. From day to day, from time to time, it's always going to change. Perfection is not part of this equation. You're not supposed to be judging yourself in this process. You do your best as you are able, no more, no less. Regardless of the quality that you believe you are doing, you want to keep going, no more, no less. In the book, there's a Buddhist story, and there is a man who wants to transcend his suffering. And so he goes to a Buddhist master, and he says, "Master, if I meditate 4 hours a day, how long will it take me to transcend?" And the master says, "Well, probably about 10 years. So then he says, "Well, let me speed this process up." So he says, "Well, master, if I meditate 8 hours a day, how long will it take me then?" And the master says, "Well, probably 20 years. And he says, "Wait a minute, that does not make sense. I'm going to meditate more, but transcend later? Why is that?" And the master says to him, "You are not here to sacrifice your joy or your life. You are here to live, to be happy, and to love. If you can do your best in 2 hours of meditation, but you spend 8 instead, you will only grow tired, miss the point, and you won't enjoy your life. Do your best, and perhaps you will learn that no matter how long you meditate, you can live, love, and be happy." So I hope you take this opportunity, or after church or whenever, or order it online to get this book. It's been a profound tool in my life, and I wish you all the best. Thanks.